Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of It's Okay, We're From the Internet. We're back.
We are indeed back.
We're back. No, God, I've still been watching repeats of Top Gear.
Oh. very early Top Gear. Pre Hammond and May, or Hammond and May Top Gear,
Golden Era Top Gear. Yes,
but Top Gear,
not Tiff Nadell. Awesome. Although Tiff Nadell's road test of the McLaren F1 is excellent.
You're right. You are correct about that.
You might be able to hear it softly in the background there. But before we get too off topic today, we will be discussing Terrier Davis and, of course, Temple OS. Although I specifically made this Terrier Davis because there's a lot of Temple OS content out there, but not a lot that focuses specifically on Davis.
Yes, I actually have to apologise to the big man in advance. I am not running my system in 640 by 480 for this. I just can't do that with my monitors. It's too blocky.
I was tempted to record this and upload it in 480p, but then the text would not be legible, I'm afraid.
No. So, sorry, God, but not today, big man. I can't do it. You need the small screen. What you need is many small screens all running 480p. That's the way forward.
Yes, but I'll just fade that out now. Thank you to the YouTube channel Dave Eddy for that piano cover of Risen, which is a little theme we're going to be using here, but it is kind of the Temple OS theme, and it's hard really to unpick Terrier Davis from. One, the legend of himself, and two, there's something of a meme that is Temple OS.
Oh, something of a meme.
Okay, it is quite a big meme. It's one of, I'd say, in terms of programming, especially operating systems, apart from like Blue Screen of Death, don't have that many specific memes, whereas Temple OS is just full of them. And again, we'll talk about its cultural impact further on in the video here. But what was your first encounter? I know he was kind of in the background of internet culture for a while, but what was your first encounter of Terrier Davis?
My first encounter of Terrier Davis was, you know what? It's probably hearing the term glowy and the classic, CIA glowing niggas, etc. meme and going, where's this come from? I need to look this up. And finding out about that, and that's from, you know, friends talking about it, friends who go, oh, this guy's a glowy, etc. And it became synonymous with the, you know, Fed posting and Fed boys all over the place. And it turned out that it was this tragic genius figure that's using this terminology. And the fascination grows from there, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, I've got a quick... this is from the Internet Archive. Somebody who just has an archive
That is peak male physique.
Yes. I've quite a few just Terrier Davis photos throughout his life. I'll be using this on screen when we talk about the man sometimes, just because it's quite nice to have. And a lot of these I haven't really seen before. But Terrier Davis is something of an example of what I like to refer to, or some people refer to as the targeted individual. Tell you what, I'll just quickly play you this quick speech you may or may not have heard before from an individual known as Francis E. Deck, who was active, I believe, in the 1960s right through into the 1980s, although by the 1980s his health and output had generally declined, but here we go.
In 1965, CIA gangster police beat me bloody, dragged me in chains from Kennedy, New York Airport. Since then, I hide in forced jobless poverty, isolated, alone, in this low, deadly nigger town old house. The brazen, deadly gangster police and nigger puppet underlings spray me with poison nerve gas from automobile exhausts and even lawnmowers. Deadly assaults, even in my yard, with knives, even bricks and stones, even deadly touch tabin or electric shock flashlights even remote electronically controlled around corners projection of deadly touch tarantula spiders, or even bloody murder accidents to shut me up forever with a sneak undetectable extermination.
There we go. Mr. Francis E. Decker. That's not him speaking. That's somebody doing a dramatic reading. He was known as kind of a letterist and somebody who was quite prolific in the sending of letters to radio stations, judges, I believe. Quite a few people caught his ire. But he's recognized as one of the first people to be one of these kind of outsider figure, effectively schizophrenic celebrities. Some of his stuff is slightly, he talks about a mad, deadly, worldwide communist gangster computer guard and CIA gangster police. It's stuff that sounds vaguely dissident, but in such a, like, up to 11 schizophrenic way.
I wonder if, because it would be difficult to, it's difficult to check out the exact details of things like MKUltra. I know that it's been released out there as, oh yes, this happened, and we found it did nothing at all, and we shut it down. That's right, we stopped those experiments, guys. Nothing good came of those at all. That was all a big mistake. Yeah, sure. They of course don't still do things like that. CIA would never be playing those sorts of games. But it makes me wonder how many of these people sort of ran into, you know, some sort of MK Ultra type or adjacent operation, and as a result have been affected. There's far too many figures out there that seem to have a distinct aversion to our good friend over the ponds, intelligence services, and the fine intelligence work that they do in a not at all scary and dystopian fashion.
It's one of those things that's quite difficult to unpick, which is part of the lasting appeal of someone like Terry A. Davis or Francis E. Deck, because they may well have been targets of some sort of surveillance, but it also might have been due, chicken and egg, to their unusual disposition and often extreme intelligence, as again it was the case with Davis. But these types of people are akin to like cultural hermit wise men. The targeted individuals are able to exist in this, I guess, slightly appealing outsider space because although a lot of them display obvious signs of mental illness, it allows them to say things that other people are unable and unwilling to say.
I mean, it was the late great David Dees was David Dees that was convinced that the CIA was sneaking into his house and stealing his shoes.
They thought someone snuck into his hotel room because basically the housekeeping came in, cleaned his room, and you know, in the process, probably moved his shoes and moved them back again to not quite where they were to hoover up a little bit. It's the whole thing was Jew stole my shoes and all that.
Yeah,
he said it was Mossad, but
that's right. Yes, but it's all very, very similar. It's not the mundane. It's unfortunate with the, you know, it's a feature of schizophrenia that you will have an awful lot of paranoia involved there, and sometimes that isn't paranoia. Sometimes they really are out to get you.
Someone is following you. Don't take your meds. it's very, his letters were very like that, but
yeah.
For those who don't know, I guess it will be a good time to go into who actually was Terry A. Davis. Because this,
who was he? Yes.
Yes, this might be a lot of people's, or not a lot, this will be at least somebody's first port of call for Terry A. Davis. Again, as I knew of him and as people knew of him, he was the Temple OS guy. He was the guy who appeared in all these wacky videos and appeared in, you know, he'd occasionally post as himself on Reddit and things like that. But really, a lot of his life was only pieced together after his death. Spoiler alert, for those of you who've been living under a rock, in 2018, we sadly lost Terry A. Davis under some slightly tragic circumstances, but this won't be, as some kind of biographies of him are, a kind of tragic tale trying to hook people in with disaster. It really is the up and downs and the feel of him as like an online presence, as a cult online presence, really. But it's difficult in all of that. as I've said before, to get a sense of the man. He himself has said a little bit about himself. I'll quickly switch here to a subreddit AMA that was requested. This was answered 8 years ago because a lot of people were very curious about who Terrier Davis was. And he just says, my first job was at Ticketmaster, 1990 to 1996. I worked on their VAX operating system, which people have a lot of people have independently verified a lot of things he said about himself. It seems that despite being schizophrenic, a lot of the things he says about himself in terms of reality and not his, you know, as we'll get to, his interactions or believed interactions with God and some of the aspects of that. When he talks about himself in a dry sense in programming, he's generally rather coherent, and that's what a lot of people always said, that when he was on topic, when he was talking about operating systems, he sounded like any other person, any other enthusiast online. But stray outside of that, and suddenly the schizophrenia would rear through to a point that some people who were used to interacting with him purely about programming found it quite jarring. But he said, I went to ASU and got a degree that was more or less about embedded system software and hardware. I counted, and there were 5 of my courses that required assembly language programming. And later down, he goes on to comment on the fact that he was an electrical engineer, which is higher up in the engineering pecking order than computer science because it requires real math. I'm a rocket scientist, he said, though not a very good one, which just kind of sounds like a glib joke an electrical engineer would make. It's this mix of, as we'll get to, cogency and complete insanity that made him such an appealing enigma.
You know, I wonder, because I did a course back in, I was doing a university degree in 92, and that involved assembly language and various other things like that, and I hated it. In fact, I left the course to go and do other work because I was earning money rather than getting into debt, actually doing money doing that. But as programming assembly language and just typing in raw code into stack registries on chips, I often wonder whether or not that might have actually been a causal factor to mental illness, because that is serious, insane type of tier work to actually just be able to do that. Requires a degree of mental flexibility that your brain might not be able to recover from completely. Brains do not work like chips.
Well, Terrier Davis was a great example of the duality of genius and of madness, because he was, as some people commented in terms of Terry, he was somebody who did have a 3.8 grade average, a grade point average, or 3.7, near enough.
3.69 or something like that. Yeah, he was very, very, I mean, he was, what was his SATs, 1440 or something? He's in the top sigma of SAT scores. He was beyond genius tier. And there's so many people in that era, in that sort of area of society, that are a little bit kooky, to say the least.
Yes, there's a story here, actually quite a well written one I found from the new stack. It's called The Troubled Legacy of Terrier Davis, God's Lonely Programmer. And it does do a little bit here, sourced as well. He led a life that was strange yet inspiring. A young Terry Davis graduate from Arizona State University, 26-year-old, with a 3.63 grade point average. That's a university grade point average, by the way. That's not a school. That's not a high school grade point average. That's very impressive. His SAT score was 1440, which, again, very impressive. He started his IT career at Ticketmaster in 1990, working on the company's VAX operating system. There's also a lot of rumors as well that was involved in quite a lot of back-end development for the early stuff to do with online sales and the early stuff to do with interfacing between computer sales and telephonic sales, not the automation there. And although none of that is specifically confirmed, there's just a lot of people who worked on similar things at the time who said that's probably, if he could show that level of acumen and was that level of genius, which he proved to be with his own endeavors, he was probably stuck on all kinds of stuff. And some of the work that he has done might be quite foundational to some of the copied over infrastructure we now have for the internet. But again, there's not much confirmation on that. but began to struggle with mental health issues, which led him to a psychiatric hospital and briefly to jail. He was eventually diagnosed with schizophrenia. Soon he was living with his parents, collecting Social Security disability payments. He was a schizophrenic and did have a lot of demons. Over the next 12 years, he built his own operating system, writing over 100,000 lines of code because he believed God told him to. This acts as quite a good lead-in, but this is, again, quite well-written and quite factual. He has a flight simulator, a compiler, a kernel, an editor. Davis bragged in one of his many online videos about Lustos, which later was renamed Temple OS. That was what he started posting under and posting about when he started posting on Reddit. It even has a grep. It has a sprite editor, a 3D mesh creator. As part of the project, Davis even created an original programming language, a variant of C, which he called Holy C. He unveiled his creation online. The reactions were mostly sympathetic. Tech Republic called his OS a testament to the dedication and passion of one man displaying his technological prowess. It doesn't need to be anything more. So, yeah.
I think that line there, because there was an awful lot of, you know, he would say very inflammatory things on Reddit and various other things.
Yes.
So on Reddit. And there was a lot of the community would, you know what they're going to say. They go, oh my God, he said CIA cloning. And that was it. He was a terrible person. He used the forbidden N-word. But the writers, back in those days, they recognized that this guy was an absolute genius, and his accomplishments overshadowed the fact that he'd used a naughty word, and that perhaps he needed to be dealt with a little more intelligently, and recognize the accomplishments of a mentally ill man who has done incredible work. I was saying to you earlier, this guy should have been a Steve Wozniak, a Bill Gates tier, you know, in fact, probably better than. I know he's quoted as going, lol, Linus, you know, I'm far more intelligent than Linus. I wrote kernel and compiler and et cetera. And yeah, he did. His single accomplishments by himself outstretch the accomplishments of just about any other programmer that I can think of off the top of my head. I'm sure I'm wrong. I'm sure there is some lowly guy sat somewhere in a basement tapping away going, no, I wrote all of this myself and did, but they will be equally a slightly odd character, I guarantee you.
Well,
he should have been so successful had it not been for certain unfortunate things about himself.
Other factors.
Other factors, yes.
Enter Temple OS, and I'll get the famous Risen theme up here. There we go. Well, I guess this begs the question, what was Temple OS? Because to a lot of people, when it was first unveiled, it was a little bit of a mystery. It was a little bit of an oddity, let's say. It was something that people hadn't really seen before.
That's not true. No, we had. There is a group of people who are now in their early 50s or late 40s that look at that and go, huh. I recognize that. That's very, very similar to the Commodore 64 and the BBCB micro, you know, operating systems that I dealt with back when I was, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old. It is very much a throwback to stuff that a lot of people saw in the early 80s, Terry said that that's what he was going for.
Yes, he did say that it was meant to be educational. It is true that some of the decisions that he made that he also attributed to God, as we'll get to, were also ones that made it more approachable. It was meant to be educational, and he said it was meant to be similar to the Commodore 64. But there was also the aspect of this was not commercial software. We had seen its like before in terms of interface, in terms of capability, but not in terms of being developed by one man not built on a different platform. Everything is completely original, really. Interfacing directly with the silicon. It's a very low level operating system. And just some of the, I guess, what would be considered arbitrary choices here. There's another article here from Motherboard Vice, which is actually doesn't handle it too badly. And again, it's called God's Lonely Programmer, because that was really the moniker that people used for him. This is before his death. This is from 2014. Terry Davis, a schizophrenic programmer, has spent 10 years building an operating system to talk to God. But what they highlight in here is the fact that, one, he did it because God told him to, but also some of the choices here, some of the choices he made were purely based on, I guess, his imagined or otherwise conversations with God. Yeah, to quote, he's done this work because God told him to. According to the Temple of West Charter, it is God's official temple, just like Solomon's temple. He built, as we'll get to in a little bit, something he called an oracle, things like After Egypt, and some of the games and some of the programming that relies on random number generators is meant to create an interface with mystery, and an interface with what he thought of as the divine. This is a community focal point where offerings are made to God, and God's oracle is consulted. God also told Davis that 640 by 480 and 16 color graphics is a covenant like circumcision, making it easier for children to make drawings of God. God demands a perfect temple, Davis says. For 10 years, I worked on programming Temple OS full time. I finished basically, and the last year has been tiny touch ups here and there. It wasn't as complete as he said. It was a bit buggy, obviously, being written by one man. It says within Temple OS, he built an oracle called After Egypt, which lets users climb Mount Horeb along with a stick figure Moses. At the summit, a round scroll of rapidly changing colors comes into sight. The burning bush before it, you should praise God. You can praise him for anything, Davis says, including sandcastles, snowmen, popcorn, bubbles, isotopes, and sand crabs. It's, again, a lot of his work was overshadowed by this very forward schizophrenia in his work, but it's also the case that he is building a functional operating system completely on his own, but he's also basing its capabilities on what he believes he's hearing from God, which makes the fact that the thing actually works in some sense even more impressive.
Oh, not half. I mean, you know, I've actually just found an After Egypt YouTube video.
I'm going to play one in a little bit. I've got a couple of clips of this. Actually, I tell you what,
because it was basically a random phrase generator, wasn't it? And
yes,
you know what, you could tie that into a modern AI, something like you know what, I'm going to go with Grok here because Elon's just released Grok recently, and I've yet to play with it, but. Did you see his meme recently of Grok teabagging ChatGPT? As a result, I need to try it. But a good GPT sort of type AI could probably be used to recreate a more coherent After Egypt. But would you want it? Because it was kind of incoherent, the messages that it generated.
It was a bit incoherent. I don't have After Egypt here, but what I do have is, tell you what, we'll have the first clip here of, I guess, Terry A. Davis saying that he believes he is holier than the Pope, but in kind of a funny sense. Well, this is only a really quick one. I'll play this one quickly.
The Pope says he has a holy kernel. I don't know. Did he talk to God in the temple, in God's official? I am Solomon's successor. You're just a pope. And I fucking wrote an operating system with compiler. Don't even know what a compiler is. Fucking pope.
Ah, there we go. He's talking about the fact that the pope couldn't build a kernel from scratch, which... One, the Pope couldn't build a kernel from scratch, and two, probably neither could basically anybody else, especially whilst building a compiler. If you were to ask like a Windows engineer, even a high up one, to build you from scratch without referencing anyone else's code, a kernel and a compiler that could interface with modern hardware, they'd tell you that it couldn't be done. Or if it could be done, it'd take a team of 50 people, probably 5 years, to get it, you know, correct and get it able to run.
I mean, the only thing I can think of, which I'm not even sure is true, is the legend that Bill Gates was flying out to, I think it was to demonstrate an operating system for the Altair, and realized he didn't have a loader and wrote a loader on punch cards on the flight out there. I'm not even certain that that's true. I think, if I remember rightly, Paul Allen wrote the loader, but. There are people that have had very, very incredible moments in programming. Wozniak did stuff similar as well, but not in that time. And again, I don't think by themselves. I think legend has been kind to them.
Yes.
Yeah. No. He was, Terry A. Davis was wildly, wildly intelligent, but also wildly, wildly schizophrenic with this.
Here he is on Reddit, as you sent to me, boasting about how he's smarter than Linus because he made a compiler and a kernel. And a lot of people, as we'll see, when programmers come out and comment on him, they go, you know what, fair enough. Because they all say what you said is that really they don't know of anyone who's done this, because to do this is insanity. For those of you who don't know, the one that's in a quote we have later, and the one I always hear, it is like a single man building a skyscraper, like a full size skyscraper, and it's rough and strange and weird, but it works. It stays up, and it's a sealed functional building. And you'd be amazed if a single man, you know, over the course of 10 years, built a skyscraper that worked. It would be incredible. but that's the thing. Designing it again from scratch is just—it's madness, really. That is the right word for it.
What was the finish? It was something like 121,000 lines of code to finish TempleOS. Now put that next to Windows. A modern version of Windows is about 40 million lines of code. So yeah, it's nowhere near that level of complexity. But even so. One person generating 121,000 lines of code and remembering how it all works coherently and compiling it and doing this and that's orders of magnitude that is you almost have to be insane to be able to do that. You can't be normal, because let's face it, insanity is just a description of, you know, very definitely not functioning normally. Normal people don't do this.
One of the reasons for TempleOS's fame as well is because it was a public domain operating system. He put out everything. It was very low level. He put out the source code. He hid nothing. He had a passion for it. And a lot of people were curious because there's not, like I said, there's no real operating system today that isn't simply a fork of a previous operating system. It really, operating systems only come from very few kernel points, to make a joke there. They come out of very few seed operating systems back in the 50s and 60s of things like OS2 and things like that, or, you know, IBM's efforts and the earlier efforts with some of the mainframe computers. Everything is a derivation of that, and work is built on work is built on work. But to have a single man's vision as an operating system was at least an interesting novelty to people, even if it served no other purpose.
You're right. It's wild. I mean, you only need to scratch the surface of Mac OS, of Linux, to find Unix at the behind that. You scratch the surface of Windows 11, and you very rapidly find Windows 3.1 and Windows 2 and Windows 1 and DOS. and so on. It is all built on previous versions of something, and this is TempleOS. It's a complete operating system from scratch. It's mind-boggling that someone was able to do that. And you know what, let's compare it to the Bible. You know, 100,000 lines of code is not far off from, in some respects, the work of the Bible. That wasn't written by one person. that was written by many, many, many people, all, you know, having actually similar conversations with God and then going off and writing chapters, if you will, of experiences. It almost needs needs including and as modern canon to some sort of.
Oops, I'll get that back up. I've got it up here, but I've got our little federal incandescent scale for what's going to come after.
Is that picture of the Fed glowing?
Indeed it is. But we'll again. I'll come back to this. We've kind of referenced Temple OS and I guess Terry in some of the stuff that we do as well. But I don't know. I don't think there's too much else to go over with Temple OS itself. We talked about kind of the Oracle stuff and the fact that it has games. I've put up a few screens here. There's a little bit of
program games and play them.
Yes, but there's also the fact that Temple OS was something that had, and Terry himself had a cultural impact. It's really this cultural impact, I think, that as I'll tell you what, I'll go back to our quick lower third here. But you know, we've got the Glow Watch stuff here that we use. We've got the glow screen there. We've got the little glow icon in the corner we sometimes use. There's a lot here that references the glow in the dark meme, as we'll get to, the glowy posting. And that really does come from Terry. It comes from a very famous clip of Terry that I will play just now, basically.
God, I hate Frasier. Fucking retard. The CIA niggers glow in the dark. You can see them if you're driving. You just run them over. That's what you do. Fucking CIA niggers.
There's also quite a famous clip of him going, oh, yeah, FBI, right? It's just someone who may or may not be FBI at DEF CON. But that's kind of by the by. But yes, the entire discourse of glowy, glow in the darks, if you've heard the phrase glow in the dark, shift out of park, that's what it means. There's a few. I believe I've got the one here too, where it's Terry in 2011 having what would be considered, well, it is a bit of a schizophrenic episode. But there's the fact that he believed that he was a targeted individual, which is one of, again, the other big cultural things about him. He wasn't just this pro. If he was a weirdo who hadn't succeeded, I still think he would have been relatively famous because of his outsider status. But it's the confluence of these two sides of him. It's the absolute insanity of some of the internet curiosity, schizophrenia stuff, melded with the fact that he was this hyper-competent man who'd built the programming equivalent in OS terms of a one-man skyscraper. It was these two things that made him this underground cultural icon.
Yeah.
I believe I got score one from 1999. Kill CIA people, hit them with cars and run. They ask. It's this famous thing that he believed that he was being followed by the CIA. Now, there's no evidence he actually was. He may have been under observation because he was a schizophrenic, quite honestly. But
I will tell you now from my personal experience. I'm not going to go into too many details, but intelligence agencies keep a lot of files on a lot of people, and you don't need to actually stick your head too far up above the parapet for them to go, let's keep a file on that particular person and track their information. It's far too easy. It's been very, very easy, especially since 2001 and the Patriot Act and various other powers that came into play at that point, for them to just scrape all the information together they can and keep files. They don't necessarily need to have a guy sat outside in a van with flyers by Irene on it and a pair of binoculars to keep tracks on and have detailed files. I am 100%. You would have difficulty convincing me otherwise that Terry A. Davis had quite a significant file on him somewhere in an intelligence agency. You know, just as almost everybody, you, me, and most people watching this, will at least have a side note in some file somewhere. Davis is much bigger than us. He was definitely being followed in some way or another. Now, whether he was tying into that on some level, psychically, or whether or not that was just a feature of paranoia that happened to be reinforceable. But yeah, I know almost certainly he was being followed, being tracked, to some degree or another, which is why I often say, you know, it's not paranoia if they're out to get you. And most of the time there is certain degrees of, you know, it's reasonable to assume if you've stuck your head above and you've said certain things and you've done certain things that will get you noticed, then you're going to get noticed and they're going to have a file on you. And they're going to probably interact with you at least once or twice in person.
Well, I've got another quick clip of Terry here. Just this is, again, it was a bit of a meme factory. This is just a thing of, it's his talk about the realistic elephant. Realistic elephant was a bit of a meme. 480p as a resolution of God was a bit of a meme. Obviously, the glowy meme took off to an insane degree. But this is just a flavor of, frankly, how charming some of his live streams were.
I like elephants, and God likes elephants. Here's a realistic elephant. It's done with interpolation with vectors. Sometimes it works. It's kind of limited. Anyway, so if you don't want to go for realism, you can go for better than realism. What do you mean better than realism? How about an elephant with blue eyes?
There we go. That's the world's most realistic elephant.
I love that. Oh dear. Sorry, I can't see a blue and yellow background with that going Ukraine flag.
Yeah, I suppose, but
I know. In fact, I ran into an old account. I was playing a board game on the other day, and I'd realized I'd logged in and set up my country of origin as Ukraine. This is way before, obviously, all the Ukraine nonsense came up, and was immediately accused by people that were playing the board game with me of going, "Lol, you've got Ukraine flag." I was like, this was set up years before.
No,
I'm not supporting
it. It didn't used to be cringe. No. No.
Uh-huh. See, normally I go for the Chad flag, because people go, "What's that?" It says, "Oh, I you know, it's Chad." But that is also slightly cringe just because Chad.
No, not many people use the flag, I guess.
But I know, right?
I think Terry, in his more cogent moments, would have been quite amused by his slightly outsized impact on modern culture. I also think, again, that as things become more paranoid and as governments become more controlling and as everyday people come into contact more and more with the security services and hear stories from people who've come into contact with the security services, the latent paranoia of someone like Terry Davis, imagined or not, it becomes more culturally relevant. I think really his notoriety has only risen since his death because of, again, his impact on culture, people looking where words come from and concepts come from, but really something almost of a victory of his worldview in that people feel a kinship and a sense of familiarity with, like, the paranoia that he embodies, because we live in, even compared to 2014, we live in a much more, I'd say, paranoid and justifiably so time where everybody's really looking over their shoulder in many circles. And that really is, I think, a sense of Terry A. Davis as the sensation, as the meme, as it goes beyond the man kind of thing. It's the fact that really a lot of people see some of themselves in Terry A. Davis. And that's what makes him somewhat of a tragic figure in many ways, too, because he's very relatable. He's somebody who has a good sense of humor in his more cogent moments. And he's somebody who's just very human as well, which you get from a lot of his content. But as you're right, he would be, I'm not playing too many clips of him here, because he would just go off on these massive schizophrenic rants of expletives and racial epithets, and you know, not that we're opposed to all of that in this channel, but really the sheer volume of it can sometimes, just through like bot detection, get videos taken down. He's a difficult person to talk about unless you have a direct line to a YouTube employee, which unfortunately we don't. So
no, he's yes, you're right, and but it's. It's also, you are looking at someone who is, he was very clearly very mentally ill. Some of the later posts, you've had some there when of his early years. His early years, he was not, you know, he definitely started spiraling down the plug hole, so to speak, and got a lot worse towards the end of his life. His early stuff, he was relatively... you know, coherent and maybe just that kooky guy who is kind of fun to talk to at parties and has the wacky ideas. And then got worse. And he, as I said, he should have been such a successful guy. And you know, he wasn't like he was a mutant, you know, sort of really nerdy geek guy that would have had difficulty dealing with people. He was a fairly normal, you know, dare I even say, you know, handsome looking guy at times. He would have been and should have been a very successful person that would have done very well for himself. He had every opportunity, apart from the fact that that incredible brain of his was unfortunately incredibly broken.
Well,
it's very tragic, very tragic. And it's difficult not to go to the tragedy. I know you said you didn't want to go there too much, but it's difficult not to appreciate the highs if you don't at least acknowledge the low points as well, because I think the differential makes it greater. There, the picture that is a homeless man at a very very low point, but at the same time, this guy has carved his name into history. He has created not just, you know, the Temple OS, a very, you know, an amazing piece of technological accomplishment, but also changed the internet zeitgeist for millions and millions of people. His terminology has been picked up and run with. This is a tragedy and triumph of a man who, you know, he was very different from the norm.
He was. And I'll play a clip of him in a second, but to give you the Cliff Notes version, a lot of his biography is a bit of a mystery. At some point, he could no longer live in his parents' house, obviously because they died. His parents were quite elderly at some point when he was living with them, and he ended up as somebody who was homeless. He didn't have a good grasp of the system. He didn't have many people around him who could help, even though a lot of people did try in his later years. It was a bit of a... I don't want to go into that stuff. Again, it is quite tragic. But we saw some photos of his fans. His fans would bring him food. People would figure out where he was, not to torment him, as some people thought, and bully him. He was not someone really who was particularly a target of ridicule. Occasionally, you would see that. You would see him be trolled or be wound up, but it wasn't. A lot of the internet had a lot of goodwill towards him because he was obviously somebody who was well-meaning as well and mentally ill, but in a way that was in certain ways harmless. He certainly never hurt anybody. He was not a danger to people. He was a danger to himself in the end, but he was not a danger to people. And he found himself, you know, he relied on his parents. He was in a declining situation. When they passed away, he ended up, through various circumstances, being homeless but without the tools, with a declining illness. He wasn't on his medication. It's a very common story, is the thing, though. There's this other aspect to him, again, that Terry Davis, despite being a meme, despite being a genius, despite being outspoken and odd, is also a very kind of everyman figure. This could happen to a lot of people that you know, feasibly.
Mm-hmm. And it's also worth noting that the community, what you were describing then with the bullying and so on, you're describing what happened to, say, characters like Dragonlord,
or Chris Chan, obviously. He was he was not a Chris Chan like figure. He did not have that kind of aggressive agitation towards him.
But it was the same community, essentially.
Yes, it was.
It's the same community. that same community is going out there and bullying Dragon Lord, rightly or wrongly, and Chris Chan and so on. And at the same time, members of that community are tracking Terry down and offering him food and going, "Come and stay in my garage. You know, I will give you a place to live." But he often turned them down, it always turned them down, sadly. It's an interesting one because it's the same community that people often go, "Oh, they were all awful trolls." Yes, and sometimes wonderful people.
I'll play you guys a quick clip just to give you an idea of how things were in Terry's kind of final months.
Well, I'm King Terry, and learned how to purify myself in a horribly impure environment. It's pretty rough living homeless in a field outside a little town, and coming into their library, and it's a very pure town, and must have been an extreme shock to them to see such a horribly sick person come in here and pollute everything, and it was a lot of torture to snap me into a...
Yeah, that's kind of... He was in and out, I believe, of a public library at the time where he was, you know, kind of using the bathroom and some of the facilities to get computer access. Yeah. But that was... He really did become your... He's wild-eyed there, you can see. He's obviously in decline. He's aging a bit. He's in his 50s by this point. And it's... Yeah, it's a bit of a sad state, really.
It is. The thing is, he's still only a shower and a haircut away from looking like... You know,
a normal guy, yeah.
Uncle Tell. You know, the guy that you... He could have so easily gone back to being normal, but obviously the brain. That's King Terry as he describes himself a bit in that video. And his castle, which is essentially a small group of thrown together bits in a field outside a village there or town that he's living homeless in. And it's terrible to see.
He's at this point, really, he has lost kind of the last vestiges of touch with reality. But we'll, unfortunately, on the 7th of September 2018, it was confirmed that Terry A. Davis had died after being struck by a train. We're not sure if he had merely wandered onto the tracks and become, you know, stuck. He sometimes did wander around in a bit of a daze. But in 2018, it was announced that he died. And there was this outpouring, actually, which is one of the things that really solidified him in the public imagination, was the fact that really there was, from a lot of the computer kind of engineering science community who'd interacted with him, this outpouring of appreciation. I'll just read you this bit. John McCoyle, this is from the Dallas Chronicle. And again, it is basically the announcement of Terry's death, but John McCoyle, the computer engineer from Sydney, Australia, said he hoped Davis would be remembered for his achievements and not his mental illness. He said it was kind of hard for a layperson to understand what a phenomenal achievement it was to write an entire operating system single-handedly. It actually boggles my mind one man wrote all that. He compared it to construction, saying a man could build a house by himself, but this was like building a skyscraper by yourself. That's where that famous... It's from an Australian programmer called John McCoyle. He's quite good in his own right, I believe. McCoyle was one of several fans of Davis who called the Chronicle to confirm his passing. One video of Davis, in which he says he's the smartest programmer in the world, has been viewed over 44,000 times. Commenters call him a programming legend. One noted that while Davis proclaims himself to be the best, he built his own everything, so I can't really argue with him. Another fan, Kate Blue, not her real name, said she wanted to keep anonymity because Davis was controversial. He had been repeatedly banned from YouTube because of his schizophrenia, and it caused him to say things that were very offensive. He couldn't help it, Blue said. He was actually a genius. I'm talking with some friends of his online right now, and they're devastated, she said. Blue, a computer engineer from Phoenix, said Davis's operating system runs on a very specific part of a computer processor and is something unique that no one else had done before. It's extremely quick, it's very fast, it can only do a few things, but what it does very quickly. Ringing endorsement there, and this, unfortunately, this is an archived version of this because the original version of this article was taken down. But glowing praise, and a very, very similar running theme is that throughout his life, throughout the study of his work, and especially with the announcement of his death, many people who were interested in like amateur homebrew programming consider him, despite the fact that he effectively built a operating system because he had visions from God, people tend to put that to one side and thankfully do look at what he actually did, which is something that in homebrew terms is incredible. It's something that everyone would aspire to do but can't do. Everyone who's like a homebrew programmer, I'm sure at some point thinks, oh, maybe I'll go against Windows. Maybe I'll build... Windows is terrible. How hard can it be to build an OS? And a lot of people find out when... Because I've heard a few tales of this. Because really my introduction to Terry, and I should have said this earlier, was through people I knew who were in the programming world. I'd heard some things and seen some things about him on 4chan as some of his memes were coming to the fore, probably in some of the earlier part of, I'd say, on the upswing of his popularity. I was lucky enough to get exposed to him, I guess, relatively early on, although I wasn't there in the original Reddit threads because I don't tend to use Reddit. But he was a figure who was always couched, even by people who didn't enjoy his offensive ranting, because a lot of people got on board with Terry because of his offensive ranting. But those who didn't, who came for the programming, were always, always glowing about him. I've never heard anyone say that he is not a genius. No one will say it, which I think, as snipey as that world can be, as often kind of social justice, you know, I guess at that time it was social justice, obsessed that world could be, how politically correct it could be, and how, you know, petty it could be. Maybe it was just the shield of mental illness, but he didn't have that at first. People didn't really realize at first. It really was the work that saved him. And I think that being remembered for his work would please Terry. And like I said, he did have these moments of cogency in which he was quite self-aware of his mental illness. There's a few of them online, but I don't feel like playing them because they're very sad. It's very sad to see a mentally ill person have a moment of clarity and talk self-reflectively, very articulately about their mental illness. But this is not a tearjerker stream. It is a stream about the achievements, the meme, and the legend of Mr. Terry Davis.
No, I mean, doing just a little bit of research, it's very, very easy to sort of to sit there and go, oh, this can be very upsetting. But as I said before, I yes and no. It also has to be acknowledged that the low underlines the how much of a height he rose to. You have to take into account the differential. It's very easy for someone to reach very high heights, but you know, started at very high heights. This guy had both highs and lows, and that's it's important to acknowledge the lows as well, I think. But you can't say you can't do justice to his genius without taking into account that, you know, He ran the 100 meters in 5 seconds despite only having one leg, essentially.
Yeah, but basically, yes, it would be. It's kind of like that. It's like running the 100 meters backwards with one leg.
Holy crap! He didn't just do well. He did amazingly well, and his life is, on many respects, as far as I can see it, a triumph. In fact, I think he said it himself. He had a triumph of a life in many respects, and should be recognized as such.
For a man who struggled so much as he did with very obvious and very severe schizophrenia, his achievement should not be belittled. And it is it's a great thing to say that, one, he had an impact in computer programming, but also to say he had such a cultural impact, like we've talked about. He is a being from the internet. That's why he's in this series. That's why he kind of fits here. We talked about 4chan, and that's one of the places really where his legend spread. I'd say that really kind of the Chans were where he was accepted in his entirety as this, you know, as this schizophrenic weirdo who is a genius. And I think that without the internet, and I know we tend to denigrate technology sometimes on this channel, but without the internet, that would not have been possible. He is one of the highs, I would say, of internet culture, despite the tragedy of his story, because he, one, was appreciated, he was communicated with properly, people did help him, and although, you know, he did die a premature death as a lifelong paranoid schizophrenic in many ways, or at least one that developed in his late 20s, he's managed to achieve a lot. You know, he did get a good degree, he did hold down a job for a while. And it's, like I said, it's more than a lot of other people have done. I know, before we get to Long the Tooth, and we'll do a bit of an outro and a freeform talk, I forgot to do shilling earlier, so if you want to support us, links will be down below. We have a Ko-Fi, which is the best way to support us, outside of YouTube. We are still monetized on YouTube. If you want to give, say, super thanks and things like that, you can give in the comments, or if you want to become a channel member to support us on a monthly basis to help more of these get made. If you want to see some of our written content, or you would like some of our more political podcasts in a audio ad free format, we also have the Substack where you can support us, the Anti-Politics Substack, and there will be quite a few more written pieces going up there in the near future. Anything you have to shill, Trig, actually, or is there? I guess you've been enjoying the real world.
I've been enjoying the real world. I've actually been quietly doing some more studying at the moment. Hopefully taking my career in a slightly new direction. Although actually going back a few steps in many respects as well to stuff I've left behind. But been studying. So I've not really been doing much online. I might put up a few. As I said to you, I was probably going to do one or two of the speeches and things I've written and done in real life and put them up on my channel. If you like, you can stick them on yours as well, because certainly one of them was was something I did at Nomos. Was it the first Nomos?
It was the first. You were there at the inaugural Nomos.
I thought that was a very good event. I really enjoyed that.
Well, hopefully being more of them next year. We basically had a bit of a washout of a year this year due to a lot of people's...
You've had terrible, unfortunate, I won't say luck, but I'm not so sure if it is completely bad luck. It's more of a series of very unfortunate events.
Basically.
On anyone. And I'm sorry to hear about a lot of that. But
it's amazing. I managed to get more done in 2022 when I was actually very seriously ill for a lot of it than I managed to get done in 2023. But that's the way the cookie crumbles, I'm afraid. I'd like to thank... obviously, Trig, thank you for coming on. Of the stuff that I've used is from people, Temple OS Archive. Temple OS Archive here. It has a very complete archive, I'd say, of quite a lot of Terry stuff. It's a good place to go. It doesn't have the most subscribers and the most views, as you can see here. But this has been uploaded relatively recently, and I've seen quite a few useful things on it, because really this is... a very comprehensive compendium, as you can see, of a lot of Terry Davis clips, Terry Davis bits. It's good that they're all online. It's good that they're all available, because it can be quite hard to pick them out and pick through them, even to find the ones that I found that are relatively famous in a proper format that doesn't have people's crap all over them, basically, is quite difficult. So thank you to Temple OS Archive, the people who put up all the photos in the Internet Archive, and basically everyone who's kept the legend and research around Terry Davis alive. Obviously, this replaces the stream today. We'll be back next week, unless you're watching this in the future, in which that stream's already been. But we will generally, I think, keep streaming or premiering videos on a Tuesday, and maybe having stuff go up later in the week if there is a recording of a Substack piece or something. But before that, this all gets too long in the tooth, I'll say goodbye from me.
And goodbye from you.
Yes.
Yes.
Have a very good one, guys.
Indeed.